Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Board of Education special meeting in open session for Monday, July 28, 2008. First on the agenda this evening is approval of minutes dated July 21, 2008. Have a motion? Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor? Aye. Opposed? And that passes 7-0. Next on the agenda, we'll be addressing the projected future MMSD budget gaps. And before I turn the meeting over to the superintendent, I'd like to take a moment to introduce someone to our viewing audience. Sitting next to superintendent is Eric Cass. Eric is our new assistant superintendent for business services and will be doing part of the presentation this evening. And you will be seeing a lot of Eric in the next few meetings. And again, welcome. We are very happy you've joined us.
Thank you.
I'll turn it over to Superintendent.
Well, thank you very much. And I begin with thanking you as a board for setting aside the time to create an important conversation for our community. And that is around the current budget and current fiscal situation for the Madison Metropolitan School District. Before I get into our what I'm hoping is a fairly brief presentation this evening, I want to lay out a perspective around the scheduled meetings as we have fought through them in terms of what our goal is to provide information to ensure that we know what your questions are and to, in fact, provide you information to answer those questions. The meeting schedule for this evening is basically with a goal to frame up what that problem is. While there may be some mention of what's been done in the past, our goal is to not talk about a plan this evening. It is not to present to you a set of recommendations this evening, but it's to have us all come to some understanding about what the nature of this problem is in terms of the fiscal status of the school district. We are looking at the August 4th meeting as a presentation of options for your consideration, with the understanding that we are not asking that action be taken in that second meeting either. But to give you a chance to look at some recommendations, options in dealing with the fiscal issues involving the school district. Later on this evening, we'll talk about two public forums that we're proposing would take place between the second and the third meeting, where we'll be able to present the overall information briefly to the public and to give the public a chance to ask questions and to share concerns, with the idea that the meeting on August 18th is a presentation of recommendations for your consideration. And I want to underscore through this, it's our intent to be responsive to your questions. So if that has to modify the timeline as a result of that, we're prepared to work with that. But I just wanted to give you a sense of how we as staff are thinking about the ordering of these meetings. Another way to say this is we're not making recommendations tonight. We're not asking the board to consider any action tonight. We're asking for an opportunity to develop an understanding amongst us, as well as with the people in the community watching this, developing an understanding of what these problems and issues are. So I begin with an overview of the material that we put together, and reminding us that our anchoring really comes to what the Wisconsin Constitution asserts as a guarantee for children, which was reiterated in the Vincent v. Voight case, which is that 2000 case, most recent state Supreme Court case affecting the funding of schools. Wisconsin students have a fundamental right to an equal opportunity for a sound basic education, one that will equip students for their roles as citizens and enable them to succeed economically and personally. Yes, we educate children, but there are purposes behind that education. And obviously, we know that there are resource commitments that need to be made in order to address this type of legal commitment, which I also believe has ethical and moral assertions behind it as well. We begin the presentation by focusing on why is there a problem. And we want to first and foremost point out that the issues affecting this school district are issues that are also occurring in other school districts in the state. While there may be some circumstances, and there are circumstances that are unique to one place or another, we know that this funding dilemma and the gap that exists between what the current state funding formula provides and how expenses are being dealt with in school district is not unique to the school district, although we have our story here that is certainly unique. And again, I want to emphasize that it really lies at the heart of it is the constraint between the current formula that was put into place in 1993, which basically asserted that the state will provide more resources to schools through the two-thirds funding if, in turn, school districts would control their costs in two ways. One was through the revenue cap, and the second was through the qualified economic offer. And so that was the kind of exchange or the quid pro quo that was made at that time in public policy to be able to provide more state funding for schools at the same time to place limitations on how much school districts could spend. In the document, we point out examples of this dilemma as it's affecting some of the top 10 school districts in the state, ranging for an example of Waukesha School District, a $2.6 million program and service reductions for the 08-09 school year. The district that I'm most recently familiar with, Green Bay, with a $6.5 million program and service reductions. And then just to point out the difference, as we mentioned Racine there, we use the wording increased revenue authority. That represents their gap, but that's also, it's described that way because of having more authority through a successfully passed referendum to exceed the revenue cap within that community. So that's what's meant by an increased revenue authority. The funding formula is one that school districts across the state are wrestling with. You know the history that this school district has had in terms of the types of decisions that have been made, which we're going to underscore in just a minute, to accommodate that funding formula. But as I turn this over to Eric for the bulk of the rest of the presentation, I'll conclude. It's all with the idea, yes, there's the need to have schools funded, but it's around the assertion that our kids have to have a high-quality education to be successful in the world that they're growing into. And yes, we do have a fiscal responsibility to use community resources in the most cost-effective manner. And the reality of it is there are constraints in meeting that proposition. So with that, and I'll return for the conclusion, I'll turn it to Eric, who will provide us more detail on the nature of the problem.
Thank you very much, Dan. And thank you for the warm welcome once again. And I'm very excited to be here talking to you. Unfortunately, it is not my favorite topic, even though I've presented and talked about what we're doing this evening. As Dan alluded to, where I come from in Waukesha, the problems are all the same throughout the state of Wisconsin, and it really does hinge around a lot of what we're going to go over this evening. Dan alluded to two terms that I'm going to try to get a little bit more in depth on. This is meant to be a skeleton, and hopefully I can fill in the holes. Please feel free, if you do have questions, to jump in at any point in time so I can clarify or answer those for you. Revenue limits were state-imposed during the 1993-94 school year. Basically, what they are controls that were meant to limit property tax growth in the state of Wisconsin.
We're having a hard... You're a little muffled. Maybe if you can... The microphone can go a little closer.
I'm sorry.
Closer.
Is that better?
Is that better?
Can you hear?
Okay. I bet. So revenue limits, as I was saying, were a state-imposed legislation in 1993 that was really meant to curtail property tax increases in the state of Wisconsin. And really what it did is it limited the amount of money a school district could receive in three main areas. Number one, property taxes. Number two, equalization aid, which is the state's commitment to funding in the state of Wisconsin. And also something called the computer aid levy, property tax levy. And what that really does is it's property tax relief passed along by the state of Wisconsin for computers that are tax exempt within our taxing authority. So those three main areas are really what made up this revenue limit. Since 1993, there have been tweaks and things done to the revenue limit, but overall, the formula has been pretty much staying intact. Every Wisconsin school district in 1993 was frozen at their per pupil amount that they were spending. So truly, in 1993-94, no two school districts were created equal. School districts that were very conservative remained at the lower level, and districts that were overspending or more liberal in their spending at that point in time were locked in at a higher rate. And then what happened every year is, on the revenue limit, there was a per pupil increase. And what that did is it increased every school district's per pupil allocation by the same exact amount. In 1994, that was $194.37. And then in 2007-08, that has risen to $264.12. Over that 15-year span, there's been an average increase of 2.2% per year. Now, that's going to be an important point as we talk about the next couple of pages and how our revenues have increased by 2.2% per year since 1993, when we talk a little bit further about the qualified economic offer. And really what happens is that per pupil allocation is then multiplied by a three-year rolling average. And that three-year rolling average is important because it helps districts that are declining in enrollment or pretty stable. But there's a negative to it. If you do increase enrollment, it takes you 3 years to catch up to that per pupil increase. Because again, it's the three-year average. So the two previous years, the current year divided by three. So it truly is an average that is, tries to level out any impact a major decline or a major increase in enrollment would have on any given school district. Moving further into the qualified economic offer, which Dan alluded to, the opposite side of the house, the expenditures, that was another piece of legislation that came about in 1993. And what the legislator said was that to avoid binding arbitration, a school district must offer an compensation package of salary and benefits that would be 3.8% over the prior year's expenditure line items. Now, when you think about that and what I talked about with the revenue, we'll get into in the next couple slides, but that 3.8% is on 85% of many school districts in the state of Wisconsin. So almost 85% of the budget here in Madison increases annually by a minimum of 3.8%. Now, that is a blend of salary increases and benefit increases. So a lot of times when districts are proactive, do make changes, there is a requirement that a lot of those savings would be passed along to the bargaining unit for the teachers' unit. Now, the teachers' unit is the only unit that is under the qualified economic offer, and there's other rules around what other units could get based upon that. But teachers are our main employee here in our school district, and that's one of the major expenses. Since 1993, it's important to know that, on average, the school district here in Madison has averaged about 4%. Now, remember that 3.8% is a minimum that needs to be offered. So kind of what that's done, in essence, here in the state of Wisconsin, is set the floor that you start negotiating around. And a lot of times, in order to keep labor peace, you do go a little bit above and beyond on those compensation packages. Flipping to the next page, this is the budget breakdown that is part of our annual budget that I'm sure the board has seen many times before. And that's talking about 84% of the school district's budget is tied up in salary and benefits. We are meant to educate children, and we do that through the use of employees. Now, that's the beginning. When you talk about fixed costs, you talk about utilities. We're no different than any homeowner or any of us that has to pay our utility bills. We see natural gas increases from We Energies and providers that we use. Student transportation increases on an annual basis around 4.3% here for the school district. Maintenance of our facilities are all within that 2% increase annually. And districts' insurances, such as workers' compensation, liability, things that we need to protect our school district and the people we educate in that workforce, are all increasing at rates well above that 2.2%. Moving to the next page, this is a historical graph that we put together that looks at the 1992-93 school year, the last year that boards had the authority to levy up to what they thought they needed for the education and to meet their expenditure demands on an annual basis. So what we did is we baselined that at a balanced budget without any reductions. And then the bottom line follows the trend of revenue limit increases that our school district has seen since 1993. Then on top of that, the top line listed as expenditure increases is the actual expenditures the school district would have annually if there was never any budget reduction done by the school district. Now, that's also balanced by the board's ability over that time frame to use what's called equity or fund balance to offset annual expenditures. So the school district has done a pretty decent job of mitigating that dollar amount that could be a lot more than $60 million total over the life of since 1993-94. So they've done many things that we'll talk about, not only in the facet of reductions, but also efficiencies gained and the use of equity on an annual basis. So looking at this graph, what the Board of Education does on an annual basis to balance a budget is it takes that expenditure and it flattens it out to meet the revenue limit requirement. So we really truly do things that we will talk about on the next page to bring our expenditure line item down to the state required revenue limit. Then getting into what has been done over the last 15 years, and again, this is not meant to be comprehensive. This are a lot of the major initiatives and things that this school district has undertaken in order to gain efficiencies and meet that state-mandated revenue limit. I think overall, every school district, and from what I've seen here in Madison over the last 2 weeks, has been very proactive in financial management and decisions that the board has made over that 15-year period to delay many of the major program reductions that a lot of school districts around the state have already seen. The district is always looking to create efficiencies, and some of those efficiencies I'll get into in a moment. Unfortunately, since 1993, the board has had to reduce programs and services by over $60 million. And you can see in that second bullet point, those are grouped by five-year increments. For the beginning of revenue limits and a little bit after 2000, the board had used equity to mitigate reductions, but you can see that in those five-year increments, we went from a little over $10 million to over $14 million to now almost $36 million over the last five fiscal years or school years here at Madison. Then from 2000 to 2005, the district received the authority through a referendum to exceed the revenue limit authority for maintenance of facilities. So the community thought it was important to maintain those facilities, which we would normally pay for under revenue limits. We received the authority of almost $20 million over that five-year period. Then again, in 2003, the community approved a revenue override authority of $12.3 million, and the school district levied a little over $3 million. That was balanced by almost $4 million of reductions that the Board of Education approved at that time to balance the 2003-04 budget. Then again, in 2005, the community renewed the maintenance for facilities referendum in the amount of a little over $26 million. That's set to expire in the 2009-2010 school year. Getting into some of the main efficiencies created, energy conservation, which is huge all over the state of Wisconsin. Madison has done an excellent job in saving almost over $2 million annually through a lot of the good work that Doug Pearson and his folks do over in the maintenance department and initiatives that they bring forward, that the board has seen a lot of those. Implementation of the Lawson software, which will garner about $4.5 million in efficiency savings through implementation of that software. Transportation savings, over $600,000 annually. That's made up of two pieces. First, there was a private school partnership that was negotiated a little while back that saves around $250,000 annually for the private schools manipulating some of their bell times. And that's piggybacked on the school district manipulating their bell times around 2001 to stagger the bus routes, creating two tiers, which eliminates some routes and creates those efficiencies. The next one is the use of TIF monies to pay off district debt early. We all know that for 2008-09, there was a TIF defeasement of about $5.7 million here in Madison that the board took action to not only fill the gap for the reduction, but utilize the remaining $1.3 million to pay off debt early. That will save quite a bit of money in future interest that would be paid on those bonds. Then also in the recent past, the board changed health insurance plans from PPOs to HMOs for most of our employee groups and retained about 15% of the total savings that was garnered from that change. And then an annual review of Fund 80 as part of the budget approval process has also created efficiencies and looked at the way that we spend the community service tax levy here for the Madison School District.
Eric, thank you. We have provided backup material on the lengthy history of decisions that you have made as a Board of Education, both in the areas of reductions as well in the areas of efficiencies. And I think that's an important part of the story, and it certainly provides more detail than what we've provided here this evening. The fact of the matter is, under the current funding formula, districts have to have these kind of conversations, and boards of education, like you, have had to face, you know, from year to year, how do we manage that constraint between the revenue cap and the expenses of the school district. In terms of the picture for 2009-10, I think it's important to point out that a conscious decision to use that TIF district completion avoided only for a one-year period of time further reductions. I think you can see, especially using Eric's five-year chunking in these past 5 years, that representing over double that what was done in any of those other two previous five-year groupings of time. And so being able to use that and retire some debt at the same time, my feeling has given us an opportunity to say, well, long term, you know, what's the next step? But I think what's important to point out is that that represented, a one-year solution. That doesn't represent the solution going forward, because the gap remains. I do want you to know that when the budget was originally provided to you, the information regarding the forecast assumptions had a projection of a $9.2 million gap for next school year. I want you to know that that has been reduced to $8.2 million. And I want you to, and I'll share with you in a minute about what we're doing to fine-tune that on all of our behalfs, but I want to just have Eric take a second to explain what allowed us to go from 9.2 to 8.2.
Mm-hmm. And it really hinged around revenues that were budgeted into the forecast of about $1 million for fees and other things that, unfortunately, when we were doing some looking at the data over the last week, we found that they were not carried forward correctly. So when we found that error and then began to carry those forward correctly, there was a reduction of about $1 million from that 9.2 to $8.2 million.
Now, having said that, and having had numerous discussions with Eric and others about that, what we've decided to do is to go back on all of our behalfs and reformulate all the assumptions, to look at them, you know, anew. And so our goal is, obviously, by the third meeting that's scheduled, is to let you know if there's any adjustment beyond this $1 million adjustment. I also have to say that if there is an adjustment, we don't know which direction it would go in. And obviously, our hope would be, can there be some other things that would legitimately reduce that gap amount? Our goal is to be really comfortable as staff in presenting. You know, we want to be more comfortable than what we are right now. And so what Eric is doing is he's gone back to the organization that did that forecast, and we're having it redone just to make sure that there aren't any other lines on there that cast something different. And again, my hope is it wouldn't go in the other direction, but I think it's more important that at the end of the day, when you're making those decisions, based on recommendations that we'll bring to you, that all of us know what that final number is. So this is what we're comfortable forecasting for you today, and that is that there's been a reduction from $9.2 million in the gap to $8.2 million, and then there's more to come once those assumptions are completely redone. So we'll keep you updated as that work is done, and we're projecting around August 13th to have that done on all of our behalfs. So, again, our goal is by that last meeting is to present to you the most accurate dollar amount that gap consists of. Our additional goal in terms of, going forward, what's next, and obviously it's a commitment to working with you to ensure that we remain fiscally prudent in our recommendations, and that we are also examining whether or not there are any additional reductions and efficiencies that we can bring to you as part of the package with the final recommendations. And I'm not able to project yet that there are, but I want you to know that that's part of the journey that we're on, is to say, is there anything else, once we know what the gap is there anything else not affecting programs for next year, because we've made commitments to programs for next year, and obviously contracts are in place. But I also feel that it's part of our responsibility working with you as a board to make sure that we've done that due diligence, that we've looked, opened it back up and say, is there anything else, once we know what that gap is, that we can legitimately recommend for further reduction or additional efficiencies. So that obviously has to be part of our commitment between now and that final meeting that's scheduled. And so we do intend to identify any areas in that, potential reductions and efficiencies. We also intend is to present to you at the next meeting what the potential options are, including presenting revenue generation plan that would be tied to a referendum. You know, while we're not presenting you that recommendation, we know that that gap is of sufficient size that given the reductions that have been made, that it's quite likely that one of those options has to be the conversation around a referendum. And then I felt it was important that we stayed here, that beyond this, we have an obligation to work with you and others in the community to create at some point in time a discussion about the funding formula itself. I mean, because none of what we're recommending ultimately to you, or I should say it this way, all of what we're recommending to you is within the current funding formula because we have no choice but to work within that context. But I guess what I'm saying is that this also requires some advocacy strategies that are more long-term than this discussion. And certainly I'm committed to having that kind of discussion and seeing what direction we can go in with that. I mentioned to you that our target right now is $8.2 million, but our goal is to see if that number can be less than that in the final analysis, and I don't know yet if we're going to be able to meet that. I hope we can, but also that in doing so, our goal is to have the least amount of impact on children and the services that they need to be educated around what the state constitution calls for. We do want to have a discussion with you about the forums that are upcoming, but that can evolve as part of our discussion next. We also want to present to you around that referendum concept next time ideas on recurring or non-recurring referendum. And here's the obligation that I feel, and that is eventually we'll make a recommendation to you for the third meeting. But I think it's important that we get on the table for you all the pluses and the minuses that go with one type of referendum or another type of referendum, knowing that in the end some judgments will have to be made. So we'll be prepared to speak to that concept next week and to give you the pros and cons as we would see them, which will inform you, your discussion as a board. We also, as staff, want to have a conversation about are there any other needs that we can't meet in any other way? And I want to let you know that this is not we're not urging ourselves to go into any exorbitant kind of direction, but I just feel an obligation to make sure that we're at least examining minimal things like school safety kinds of considerations. And again, that obviously needs a more complete plan tied to it. And I'm not predicting that we're going to come with anything in that area. I want that understood very definitively. But I at least feel an obligation that we at least as staff have that conversation around any of those types of needs that we cannot address in any other manner. We may choose not to recommend anything to you, but at least I'm wanting you to know that we want to be able to have that type of conversation as well. So with that said, what we tried to provide you is an understanding of the current state of funding formula, to make sure that we provided you and our community an understanding of what historically has been done, both in the way of reductions and in efficiencies. And our hope is that we've captured as much of it in one of those two supplemental documents, but we're not going to take any exception. If there's something that we've missed, we certainly want to be able to have those documents be accurate. But we've tried to capture those things. We are forecasting that the current gap, given the current formula, is $8.2 million, and we're going to review those entire set of assumptions. Eric's doing that work to see if that is, in the end, what we're going to recommend as the gap. I just feel that it's important that we feel on solid ground with what that gap is. And I'll tell you, what it came down to is that if we discovered that one place, we had to look at all of it, is what it came down to. And so we're in that process right now, and we'll have that data by the 13th in order to inform the discussion at the last meeting. So with that, both Eric and I thank you for this opportunity to present that information, and we would welcome any questions that you have.
I have a comment and a question. First of all, thank you both for the presentation. I think it helped get everyone on the same page, and I really appreciate the efforts that you're taking to go back and look at all of the forecast assumptions. I thank you very much for doing that. I have a question for the superintendent. We get questions from the community on the concept of same service budget or cost to continue budget, and you know, what does that really mean? How do we know as a community, as a school district, that we're doing the right things that support a vision, that we're staffing appropriately, that the programs that we have in place are working and are the right programs? And I was hoping you could share, you know, in general terms, your thought for approaching this as we move through the year.
Sure. No, I think that's an important place to have us grounded as well. Now, we know that we've made commitments for next year. So the short term is just this next year. But what I want us to, and I referred to it at my first meeting with you, and as well as we got to know each other during the search process, is I want, and I will be recommending to you near the end of the first semester, second semester beginning, a process whereby we will re-examine our entire strategic plan as a school district. We have a plan in place, and in no way is my comment to suggest that any of those elements are the wrong elements, but I am strongly biased by the view that any healthy organization does a snapshot of itself through good planning and identifies the priority directions to be taken through that plan, which will have very well-defined action plans that both need to be made explicit in terms of what those priorities are, which really can help inform budget discussions, you know, forthcoming in terms of, you know, what once we proclaim something, and my experience usually is to categorize things, although it doesn't have to be, in terms of priority ones, priority twos, and priority threes, but it allows us to think about the priorities of a strategic plan and more than we have to get this done tomorrow, because we know we don't have that type of capacity to do that. And in no way am I saying that it changes everything we do. In fact, I hope it doesn't, but it regrounds us in knowing, because we've had the conversation with a large committee of internal and external stakeholders with some board involvement, we've had the conversation about, are these things still important to us? Or are there other things, given our data, that are more important now? So I'm a proponent of getting at that vision through that type of planning process, which really should help already with the kind of decisions that we'll need to make, you'll need to make the year after this new year that'll start on September 2. I mean, that plan will be in place if you accept the process, and I'm going to bring you the whole package about how what I'm recommending, because this can't be the superintendent's strategic plan. It has to be the district's, all of our strategic plans. So it's important that you accept the parameters of that planning, and if you have other ideas, that, you know, we know what those are, and we shape that together. So I'll bring you that planning process near the end of the first semester, but I believe that document will help us create those priorities starting the year after the one that begins on September 2. Is that what you were looking
for? Yes, thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Winston.
Yes, I have a question again. Thank you, Superintendent, and Mr. Cass as well for the presentation. One of the things I wanted to ask you about is, and obviously you have laid out dates of when things are going to occur. In terms of a referendum, I mean, I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but it's a community decision to make. And obviously as the members of the Board of Education, you know, we should be trying to represent the community's views. On the 18th, when you give the, in essence, the recommendations to the board for whatever it is you're going to recommend, the pros and the cons,
right.
In the past, the thing that we have done is instead of voting on that particular night,
right.
we had waited a week, in essence, to allow ourselves to read material,
right.
gather community input, you know, just kind of right. think about what it is we are about to embark on,
right.
if we embark on anything.
Right.
With a week delay, in terms of a actual vote from the Board of Education, would that delay any decisions that administrative staff would, be making?
Absolutely not. I do want to check with Steve. In fact, that's one of the prerogatives I would hope that you would consider taking. I mean, and so our presentations will be in three, unless you have more questions than what we've answered, then we're prepared to, do whatever is needed to make sure that we answer those questions for you. But there is that time built in that that could occur.
Okay. I mean, let me also be very clear as well. If there was a vote tonight, I would be prepared to, make a vote
right.
tonight.
Sure.
Okay. And that's because I have lived this, as all of us have lived this for a long period of time. We've discussed it. And tonight is a good opportunity, again, as President Silveras has said, to get on the same page.
Right.
But as we move forward, I think it will be very imperative that, again, a referendum is a community decision, and it's a community discussion as well. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn. I'm not speaking for anyone on the board. Hopefully they'll be able to, other people will be able to share how they feel
right.
as well. But I do believe that as much information we can give to this community, it'll be for the better. And I just really believe that, you know, this is where we are right now. There's no secrets. The information tonight has been laid out. And obviously more information as we move forward will be needed. But I do believe that, again, it's part of a community process to, again, get the information, pull back, and then we need to move forward.
Sure.
If we move forward, it will be very quickly.
Right.
I guess I'm again not saying anything anyone doesn't know.
Right.
But as last week when we discussed about calendars and mm-hmm. times and things like that, a referendum would put a lot of things kind of, you know, we probably have to reprioritize a lot of things as a board. Because you know, the time
right.
will become very quickly,
right.
and you know, we'll be inundated with a lot of questions and
right.
issues and things like that, and so
right.
I just wanted to put that out there.
Sure.
Ms. Mpayak?
Well, first of all, I also would like to thank you for your presentation. I appreciate the time and thought that has gone into the information and the fact that it was easily digestible as opposed to causing indigestion. So I thank you for that. My stomach thanks you for that. The viewing audience probably is thanking you from their Barca loungers. I guess, you know, what I really like about the way we're proceeding is that we aren't being asked to make a decision tonight or next week or the week after. And I think some of the places where we said, I don't want to make a decision this week, was when we had things that came to us that day or 3 days earlier, and they were big questions and we weren't prepared to choose. I am hoping that we will all be talking with various communities and community members in the coming days and weeks to get a feel for what people are thinking and feedback on the referendum. Part of me says absolutely, I can wait till the 25th to make a decision, but part of me also says, how many days do we have between now and the November elections? And that's the part where the 18th doesn't feel too bad to me. So I think it's, you know, I think there's going to be a balance, and I appreciate having the luxury of having a thoughtful, deliberative process as a group and with administration as partners in working through some of the questions
mm-hmm.
so that we can, at the earliest date that we're prepared to do so, take a vote so we know where we're going and what we're going to be doing this fall. So thank you for everything.
You're welcome.
Ms. Moss.
Yeah, I want to thank you also for this information, and it's also been presented in a way that I think is very understandable to the public, so I hope that a lot of people will download this and take a look at it, because it explains especially the revenue limits and the qualified economic offer very well. I had some specific questions, and I'm not sure that now's the time to ask them, but they are questions that I think will come up from the public. And I'm wondering if there's some kind of a Q&A blog or something that we could put together for people in the community so that they can ask questions. For example, fuel costs. For example, special ed money that came in last year. These sorts of questions that people may have. And also, maybe the board could also write their comments or their questions, right, and then you guys could answer those for everyone to hear. And I'm also interested in knowing how we do plan to engage the public in this process. I'm not sure if you're thinking about the sorts of public hearings that we've had before or something more open. Have you had time to think about those yet?
Sure. Well, first, in terms of the having something on our website, we can immediately have that conversation as staff in terms of, you know, what can we set up that would allow people to ask questions and provide answers, and just keep letting that roll and grow. Because I think, while we may have thought through a lot of the questions, I know we haven't thought through all of them that are going to be on people's minds. And so we can look at that right away. One of the things that we've looked at is obviously, I guess I'll comment on two things. In terms of the more immediate public hearings, we want them in some place other than this building. We want to be able to do, we've talked about one on the west side, one on the east side. The extent to which, although there may be some problems with this, if we can find a community location, although it seems like we're, just in kind of, with some preliminary checking, things aren't as available as I had hoped. But I think what's most important is we find a way to connect, with members of the community through these forums. And then what we need to construct for you, which we have not done yet, and part of it is we're just not being presumptuous as staff as we do this, is what will that information providing plan look like? That has to be put together in a defined way. So in terms of communicating with parent groups and reaching out to other organizations, and I can assure you that it'll be our intent to describe that in a much clearer way. But I know that needs to happen, and we're not doing it quite yet, although we will need to do it very soon if that's your judgment, is because we're not presuming the solution at this point, but we know that time is of the essence too. We'll put that together for you.
Ms. Passon?
I want to thank you, too, for putting together this historical reductions. I've always wanted to see one of this, and it's really rather incredible if you go through it. I would like to take it one step further, if we could. For example, I'd like a breakdown exactly of how many cuts were made to administration and the cost savings, how many cuts to direct services to children with the cost savings, the total clerical staff reductions, and the cuts we've made in our facilities and reductions there. That, I think, would be very important for us to have and to present to the public. Also, there is this figure that's out there that seems to change every time you ask a different group of people of how much money we spend per child in this district. Do you have that number? Do you know what that exact number is?
Not off the top of my head. It's a little bit over $10,000, I think.
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Sometimes it goes as high as $12,000, according to one group, or $11,000 to the other. I would love to know, if we could break down that money, let's say it's $12,000, how many thousand go to staff, how much of it goes to materials and curriculum, how much of it goes to planning, and so on. So we could show what we do with that money.
Yeah.
That would be very useful as well. The other thing I'm interested in knowing, and I don't know this because I wasn't on the board when it was presented to them, and that is, how does Lawson save us so much money? Because we know that people out there go and look at our budget and look at these big, big money items, and I don't have an explanation.
Okay. If I may, we can provide you a breakdown by category.
Okay.
Because the report can simply be done that way. My question is, when we do that, have we sufficiently addressed your category? So let us provide that to you, and then you'll look at it and say, you know, if something else needs to be broken down further. We'll provide you a more accurate figure on the cost per child, and then we'll get more defined relative to the loss and savings.
I want to thank you very much for this, because what we're pledging to the public is this honest approach.
Right.
Everything's out in the open. Everything's there. Nothing's going to be hidden. And I think when they hear this, I think they're going to accept a lot of the things that we have to say to them because of our honesty. So I appreciate that very much.
We will get that for you as part of the next cut of information to give you.
Mr. Hughes?
I had a couple of points. First, in terms of scheduling, if we were to choose to go to a referendum and if we wanted to get it on the November ballot, because that has the largest participation rate and we get the fullest sense of the community, what is the requirement in terms of certifying the question to the state? When would we have to get that done?
Right. We have all of that information, and I can make that available to you for next week's presentation as part of that. We'll give you all those dates. I don't know if...
September or Friday, is it going to say it's Friday, September 1st is when we'd like to get into the city clerk's office.
We have plotted all of that information backwards from the November election to when it needs to go to the city clerk's office, and I'm going to say it's Friday, September 1st. And that gives them the 90 days they want to be able to certify everything to make sure that it's correct for the November election.
But understand, we'll make sure that we'll provide you that full calendar.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I also found interesting and striking the list of all the cuts that have been made over the years. I suspect that some of those cuts were later restored to some extent or another because some things seem to be cut several times. What would be interesting to me is to see how the district differed in 1993 before the cuts were started than exists today. For example, what sort of student ratios did we have that we no longer have? What kind of services were available? I assume the TAG programming is greater then than it is now. A whole list of that sort of stuff I think would be useful.
Okay.
Put in a greater context.
Okay. We can work on that for you. We had a pretty lengthy discussion about that whole idea, because the reality of it is, if a cut is made in a given year, it is a cut. And then 2 years later, there may be a whole other conversation. So we wanted to cast it in the most accurate terms in terms of what happened that year. But yes, you're right. But I also would want to say is the great majority of that list represent things that were not brought back. There are some things of an incremental nature, I would describe. I don't know if you want to add to that. I mean, is that accurate?
That is accurate.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I'm trying to get at, is what actually have we lost?
Right, okay. We can work on that.
Thank you. Ms. Moss?
Where are we in the three-year cycle of reporting our enrollment to the state and therefore receiving money from them? And is that total enrollment, or is that also ELL, special education, children in poverty, or is that just total enrollment? For that three-year rolling average?
For the three-year rolling average, we report that annually. So what it does is it takes, if you think about 08-09, on September 19th, we go into every classroom and count every head that's in there as required by the DPI. We fill out a report, and it becomes part of our revenue limit, our full-time equivalency. And then what they do is they take what we reported in 07-08 and 06-07, add it up and divide it by three, and that's your three-year rolling average. So then once you get to 9-10, the 06-07 school year would drop off, and you'd have that 3 years. So that's how you build your three-year rolling average of enrollment, and that's why I was saying it helps in times of significant decline, or it hurts you in times of significant increases in enrollment. It just levels out any increase or decrease in revenue that the state would allocate to any school district.
And it does count. We do count every child.
Our enrollment is fairly flat. Is that continuing to be the case?
Correct.
Mr. Rafton.
Just another thing, too. I guess just another ask of the administration and also the board officers. I'm sure you're going to have a meeting between the 18th and now as board officers. Could you also project out the calendar of what you may think, again, based on some of the recommendations or thoughts? Could you project out a calendar of events that could happen between the recommendations and a possible referendum?
Right. And just so we're clear, you mean in terms of going to that date when that vote would take place? Is that how far you're, I mean, into November?
Into November.
Okay,
yes.
All right.
And kind of, I guess when I see the recommendations, I'd like to see as much as possibly can of what you're believing, again, community forums,
okay.
School forums,
okay.
all those types of things.
Okay. I do understand what you're asking for, and we will put that together for you.
Ms. Bassett?
Now, there's one more thing, and that is telling our community what we will have to get rid of if we don't have a referendum, and if it doesn't pass, what are we going to be looking at? We're going to make some very, very serious cuts in some very important programs that our parents consider important, that our students do, and that we do. And I think it's, let's get it out there. This is what's on the line now, and get that to them.
Can I just follow up just real quick? Sure. I guess I wanted to hear the recommendations first and I guess get a direction from administration. Again, I guess it depends on what the board wants, but I guess I was, before proceeding into finding out what could be lost, at least finding out what the recommendation is first. But I understand where you're coming from, but at least, again, hearing, getting the recommendation, and then moving forward. And then we have to vote. I mean, that's really the key thing, folks. We as a Board of Education have to vote before we, in essence, ask the administration to do any more budgetary issues on a public scale, I believe. We at least have to tell them what to do next. But I understand where you're saying, well, I'm voting on a good school district, as we are going to be on September 2nd when we go to school.
Mm-hmm.
So looking further than that in terms of next year or things like that, I don't know if that's the direction that the administration is going to go. At least I want to hear the recommendation first.
In terms of what the plan is to deal
yes.
with the gap?
Yes.
Okay. No, and that you will hear, but, you know, we cannot wait just because of how all the rest of the calendar works, as you well know. We have begun those conversations about what is that effect if we don't come up with a workable solution. And so that work is not final, and I want to be very clear on that. But we have that responsibility to have begun that discussion. We spent the better part of a day a couple of weeks ago with the beginning of that discussion. And we need, as staff, we need some more time, as you can well understand. But we have begun that process as well. And that, to be clear to everyone, and that is what would be the nature of the types of cuts, as examples, if nothing else, that would have to be made if we don't find other ways to address this gap. And you're always balancing a very difficult thing here because you know, we have a responsibility because you just can't wait till June 1st to say, well, this is what we would do if something else doesn't happen in the meantime. At the same time, we don't want to create such worry and concern. And so how we balance all of that
that's what we'll work to do. But we have to do both. I mean, we have to make sure we know what those possible cuts could look like, reductions could look like, revenue enhancement ideas could look like, and at the same time, those are hypothetical until they're made real in terms of your actions. But we've begun that work.
And that information will be available at which of the meetings?
My sense would be is that we would be in a better position to discuss that on the 18th meeting.
Okay. Thank you.
And if it's available earlier, we'll provide it earlier.
Thanks. Ms. Cole?
We've all gone around and thanked you, so I'm going to thank you also. But mostly because I think this is your second meeting and you didn't give me a PowerPoint, so I'm really thankful. Serious. And I also wanted to thank the superintendent for reiterating that whole statement prior about the moral obligation that we have of equipping students to be good citizens and to become personally and economically successful. I think sometimes that we need that reminder. The other thing I wanted to thank Mr. Cass about was this whole forecast, and I appreciate your curiosity and tenacity to look under all the rocks and to go back through the entire forecast. I think that's very important. The things that I got out of this and that I would like to focus on were this whole idea toward the end where you talk about revenue. And I would like to at some point have a discussion on how we can increase revenue and perhaps have a discussion on bringing more students in as a long-term solution, even though we have this three-year rolling enrollment. What I've noticed in working with the different school boards in Dane County is that I believe there's only one that has seen increased enrollment, and they have been saved from referendums, and everyone else is either flat or decreasing. And I just think that it's good for the community to understand in the future, have that conversation. The other thing I would like to see in the future is I'm concerned about the referendum that was for the maintenance of facilities ending in 2010, and just kind of wondering what it's going to look like, if there's any way that we can guesstimate what it would look like from 2010 on, especially given the increased costs in oil and petrochemicals and so forth. And also technology, so that we kind of understand 5 to 10 years from now what those expenses are going to be. And then finally, you had also mentioned continue to work with major state education groups. And from a policy perspective, or from a board member perspective, I found it really helpful to work with the Dane County School Board Consortium, and Ms. Moss has given us information about ways and so forth, the different state groups. But I just wanted to say, as an individual, that I didn't realize that our board, our district, pays close to $13,000 a year to WASB, and some of that, it's for dues, and we do get a lot of things out of it, but I have been frustrated at times that when talking to board members throughout Dane County, that sometimes what we would assume would be that they would be a little more tenacious, they tend to be more pragmatic, and I've had representatives basically state in public, well, don't expect much to change. And so I just, as someone who's been trying to work on this, I know Marge has and others, that it's disappointing. And I hope that perhaps you can give us some new ideas on how we can work on that, because I think the board in various ways is trying to get a handle on how we can effectively change things. And I think what we don't have in here is the lack of corporate tax structure that has supported schools. And I think it's something that we should at least recognize.
And I will provide those kind of ideas as we look more long term, because ultimately, and the reason why we mentioned the other district was in part so people understand that we're not unique, but the presentation of the other district is to know that this is a statewide issue that's affecting schools and affecting education of children today. And certainly we know that there are constraints, and it's always easier, to talk about a different formula when the circumstances in all people's lives are a little bit better than what they are. But I'm also a believer we have to have a long-term view. I mean, because things will be different over time, and at the same time, we need to repeatedly say we're going to work, and I think that's been your history, to be prudent with the resources that the state and local property taxpayers provide us, and the due diligence that you hold in your role as board members, and you work very hard at ensuring. And so that's kind of our trust with the community is to ensure that and guarantee people we are going to continuously look. At the same time, it looks to me that there's something fairly endemic across the state right now in terms of how schools are being constrained and having to make decisions about reduction of programs, and it really calls for a solution different than what we can do individually in any one school board room in any one local area. I mean, it requires an open, honest discussion about what are the investments that we need to be making for children, and what are the consequences if we don't make those kind of investments. That's the kind of conversation. And there are some signs I would be first to share publicly that conversation is beginning, but it needs more traction, and it needs some kind of solutions that are presented in legislative form at some point. I mean, frankly, and I'll just be very clear about a personal opinion, is that Vincent case that I cited, Eric used in the presentation that I reviewed at the beginning here, basically concluded, as I understand it, that the state funding formula was constitutional. But there was a but, and that is it was a recognition in that decision that the education of some children is more expensive than other children. And it specifically referenced three groups. It referenced children living below poverty, it referenced children with disabilities, and it referenced English language learners. And I don't believe that there has been even a legislative response to that decision, and hopefully over time that's a leverage point. I mean, that's a place that the legislature could act. And so I mean, that needs to happen, and it's all in agreement with what you've asserted here.
So regarding the dates for the public forums, will we have those sooner rather than later?
Yeah, here's what I would suggest, and I guess we would want your feedback on this specifically tonight. Originally, we were looking at August 3rd and then August 12th. And it's our view right now that the August 3rd is too soon, because we haven't even framed up the options yet for you at least to have a discussion about. So what I would ask you to consider, and if Barbara could contact you tomorrow and get a read about availability, that we look for two evenings that week of August 11th. And that, being able to know if we've accomplished that will come in her contacts with you, if that's acceptable to you.
Great, thanks. And then Johnny's earlier recommendation on moving the vote to the 25th, having the discussion on the 18th, mm-hmm. as you had
yep.
proposed, Superintendent, and then leaving a week to get further input on the specific
right.
proposals. Is that something that we want to discuss, or do you want to...
Well, I'll offer a thought, and that is I would suggest you put it as a placeholder and then just take these a step at a time and see where you are. I can tell you the calendar allows for that.
And so there's no calendar problem, but there is yet, if a decision's made, we want to use the remaining time to provide, you know, as was asserted by you, Lucy, we want to make sure we have the good time to provide the important information. That's what you're balancing here. So my thought would be, and I think we had that August 25th date in the original calendar, my advice for your consideration is leave it there and then see where you are at the end of the next meeting. And I think my thought would be is at the end of the next week's meeting, draw a conclusion as to whether you want that fourth meeting, because you don't want to wait till that just that Monday before. But, you know, my thought would be is you could next Monday make a final decision as to, but again, you have the time in terms of the legal calendar of days that we'll need to be able to take that extra week, and I don't see a problem with doing that.
Go ahead, Mr. Winston.
Superintendent, about the budget, or about, sorry, not the budget, the public forums, how are you going to invite people to come? And let me preface this. One of the things about our community, I'm sure you, people want to meet you.
Sure.
You know, I don't know if they want to meet us. No. They want to meet you.
I don't think that's okay. True. That part.
But I see, yeah. But, would there be, are you thinking that you would invite people, the board would help get the information out yep. to the community? Whatever. Because one of the things, what I would hate to have happen is that you get a crowd, and no offense to the people who are in this facility right, right now, but these are the people who are going to be there
right.
at the forum.
Right.
And we need more
right.
people.
You bet.
You know, and again, no offense to the people that are out there, the thousands of people that are in the,
yeah.
But again, I'm sure you want to make these beneficial
you bet.
To you and the staff, and if there was any kind of ways that we can make ensure that happening, and if you remember last spring when we had our budget forums and there were four people, that, yeah. Well, one at one time, and mm-hmm. I mean, I think obviously you want something that's
right.
that's more beneficial to everyone. And so, again, how that happens, right. I think, would be something that I hope you and your staff and Mr. Bear think about.
You
and,
bet.
But because again, just kind of right. this information is good, but going back to maybe again what Ms. Passman says. It's what people are thinking about, what they would lose. That's what would bring people
right.
in. However, that's not what this is all about in terms of what you're expecting for these meetings
right.
here. So I guess I would just think about how you wanted to structure
sure.
and invite or something along those lines.
And I certainly welcome your ideas because our goal should be to be inclusive and to get the word out in a real good manner. I'll tell you what we've thought of so far is having looked at the list of groups that you worked with to receive input relative to the superintendent search, that's a very comprehensive list of people and groups that we should use as direct invitations. And then certainly getting the word out in a variety of ways to the general public that it's available. You know, my thinking is, yes, this is for a specific purpose, but we need to also think about this as that example of how we can engage with members of our community, provide information and allow people to meet us and to share what their worries and concerns are. And it has to be structured well, and we'll work on that as well. But we'll start with that list because I've looked at it myself and feel that it's very comprehensive, and yet I don't want to miss anybody either. So one of the things that we can do is to get that list to you, and you could see if we've missed somebody as well in terms of who we should make sure that we're inviting to the forums. So we'll do that in Friday's communication, or Thursday's rather.
Ms. Cole? I just wanted to say that I think that's a really good place to start because when we went through the superintendent search, it was very well attended. And one way I would like to approach this, my approach is that we're looking long term, and that a lot of the things that we're looking at, the budget cuts year to year, for this district, I think what's even more important because we're going to be working through that as we go through the year, is what the district looks like 5-10 years from now. And that's where we got a lot of input from the public, and they wanted to share that.
Sure.
And it became everything from there were cuts in the past and we want them back, to were parents concerned about specific issues or ideas that they want their children to be exposed to. And it's really, like you said, it's a process where we engage the public,
right,
and
right,
that we listen to them. And I think that's very important. And I whispered over to Johnny, but, you know, dunk tanks get a lot of people in, but everyone keeps...
I hope my
no.
reputation isn't preceding me too much.
Yeah.
I'll share that story at a later date.
Later date.
Ms. Mathiak?
I have to say that having been to forums in the past, I have really mixed feelings about the list of things that might get cut, because what I think there's an opportunity here to engage with the community, as we did with the superintendent search, on what our concerns are and what our aspirations are for the future of this school district, which I think everybody here cares about, or we wouldn't have gone through the things we went through to sit at this table. And the people who sit long hours out in the audience wouldn't be here if they didn't care. So I'm hoping that we can keep focused on what people want to see in the schools and what their concerns are. I'm a little leery of getting into why cut this program and not another one, which is what we sometimes get into when we see the list. But that's what it often comes down to, and I'd rather not go there. I'd rather be talking about, in general, what we have already given up, what we have done to be more proactive and at times entrepreneurial, to exercise due diligence on the budget, but to also share with people we've really run into some limits on what we can do. And I know there are areas where people do have questions, and I think it's fine to do things online, and I sort of agree with that. And I would also, for you, Eric, especially, if you haven't looked at what's online with board questions from past budget processes, some of the things that may come up are already there as documents. So, you know, let's not reinvent wheels. But it does seem to me that one of the ways that these forums could be used is to get questions from people. So if people want to know about transportation and fuel costs, we can talk about that. We know, for example, from last year that we lock in our gas prices with an escalator. So we've actually not been hammered as hard as some other government agencies because of the rising gas prices. But that's for this year. And when we negotiate that next contract, we're going to be dealing with higher prices. So I think that's the sort of thing that I also would hope we could include. I don't want to get into another round. My God, you know, for the last 20 years, you know, I've been hearing the debates about cutting TAG, special ed, strings, athletics, extracurriculars. I'd rather have it be about other things, if we can, to the best we can, because I don't think any of us are there right now.
Well, if I may, one of the things that we could look at doing, and I don't know if it's... until we would look at it, I don't know if it's a productive exercise or not, but you use the data that was provided to you for the superintendent search, but it may also be reflective of themes about what the community was wanting for its schools, that same data pool could be used to say, this is, and during this window of time, this is what the community said was important for the school district. This is what has happened over, you know, these five-year periods of time. This is what we've tried to do to address that shortfall, and frame it up more around what the community has in fact asked of the school district. But I have to look at that data now from that lens to know if that would, you know, if it is easily calls that out. I mean, if it easily speaks to what the community asked for from its schools. And that's something different than saying this program yes, this program no. I mean, that's not what I'm referring to, but what are those things that people talk to about the quality that they wanted to see in the Madison Metropolitan School District. And I know you probably, you know that data better than I do at this point.
It might be more broad brush than would be useful to the specific way that I think you're describing it.
Okay.
But there are certainly, you know, general themes.
Yeah.
You know, challenging education.
Right.
For all children. Those are the types of, you know, things that come out. Communication, you know.
Sure.
A lot of those that could tie to many, 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 many things that we do. So I don't know.
But
I think it would be worth looking through, but I don't know if it would be specific enough.
And it may not be, but we can at least look at it through that lens to see if it calls out for a message about what the community said about our schools. And if it doesn't yield that,
There's certainly messages in there.
Yeah.
I don't know how they
get it. Yeah, right. No, I hear you.
Yeah. Ms. Moss.
I agree with Ms. Mathiak about the kind of the format or the subject matter of a forum. I think that you're right about, and that would be a different way for us to do business, and I think it's a really good way for us to go to figure out what, I think it's more important that we figure out what people's general priorities are and kind of take the pulse of what do people want, because you're right, cutting strings, cutting Italian, you know, those would be the people coming up one after another to talk at us, basically, is what our experience has been. And you know, I'm with you. I don't think that that's really very productive. Also, when we were doing the superintendent search, we had included a lot of organizations, but there was a whole group. There was the faith-based organizations. I talked about it with a few people, but it was looked at as there are just way too many. How can we find all of these people? If we invite one and we don't invite another, then it's going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. So I would really like to start a list at least, because in looking online, a church may have 16 people in it, but it's 16 people that are in a place where our network never touches.
Right.
And so I personally feel that that is the place where I would really like for us to start moving.
Okay.
And I think we should just take the plunge. I mean, if we miss some people, we can say we deeply apologize. Yeah. Thank you for contacting us.
You bet.
You know, and I think that we can reach a lot of people that way.
Okay.
So.
I will provide you that list on Thursday and look for those other lists that you've referred to. And just if you see that there's something that we've missed, just, you know, call us and... Because, you never lose by adding a group to the list, I mean, from my perspective.
Ms. Passman, followed by Mr. Hughes.
I think in the way we set up these meetings and the structure, even within the invitations themselves, we can certainly indicate that this is not a time to tell us what we've done in the past and critique any of the subjects you've just mentioned, but rather what are we going to do in the future? In addition to that, and at the risk of sounding dramatic, our school district has spent the last 15 years living in a sort of stimulus response way. How can we do something with the minimal amount given to us? How do we keep our things the same? And we've given up on dreaming. We've given up on what would we like to do if given the right amount of money and support. What can we do beyond just what we need to do? That we want to give our children more and more and more. Not just an adequate education, not just what we have money for. And it's the dreams that sometimes keep you going more than anything else. So that's another part of it.
Okay.
Yeah, so.
Mr. Hughes.
Yeah, I certainly agree with the point that we don't want to have a discussion that pits program against program. But if there are folks who have ideas about how we could save money and say you don't really need $8.2 million if you did this and this and this, there may be efficiencies in the district that we would be able to achieve, I would certainly like to hear that. And I hope that we have the forum is set up in a way that there can be a back and forth so people can say, no, that won't work for this reason or that reason, or that may bear looking into. So I don't want it to be just a discussion of how much people value the schools, but if people do have ideas about how we grapple with the financial bind we're in, other than asking for it all in a referendum. I'd certainly like to hear that.
What I would eventually to just have the conversation from you is I'll show you a process, and then you'll react to it. I mean, if you see the kind of elements in it that you want, then that's what it'll be, and if not, you'll add to it. But I appreciate very much what you want to attend to, what your concerns are in terms of having too much focus on things that, you know, just to alarm people, that we're talking about a preferred future for children, and I think, as was described, you know, this has been a problem that has been managed for some time. But at the same time, it's hard to go the next step without making some serious decisions. And so, you know, I will suggest the process for those forms, and that'll be part of the next meeting. We'll have to do that then, because then they'll be in between, and you'll say, you know, add to it, cut and paste on it.
Ms. Mathay?
I just wanted to clarify, and I thank Ms. Moss for her comments, because I think that it may not have been clear what I was trying to get at in my earlier comments. What I would, I guess, personally find valuable to get out of the forum is a sense of the priorities and the types, not a wish list of I want this program or that thing, but the priorities and the ideas that the community has for the district as we move forward together.
Okay.
Yeah, one more that I've been meaning to ask you. When you're presenting us with the information about the amount for next year, will you have an approximate amount for 3-year, 5-year, in case we decide to go to referendum, so we can make it?
We've talked about that, and I'm sorry I did not mention that, but our intention will be to project that amount in ensuing years.
Okay.
Because the dollar amount is different, because it creates a higher dollar amount for this next year, because of, you know, the good news is we had a resource that was in place through the TIF, but that doesn't follow for the following years. Mm-hmm. And so the number is a different number in, you know, a second year and a third year, and we're working on that for you as well.
Okay, great. So on the first vote will be just whether or not we're going to referendum. There will be no specifics or what we decide to do, I should say, not whether or not we'll go to referendum. That will be our initial vote.
Yeah, what I intend to provide you as we go now between the second, I mean, as part of the second and third meeting, is that if there are any efficiencies that we can think of for the following year, that would be at least acknowledged and put on the table. And then if it is our recommendation to proceed to a referendum, what that would consist of. But I don't want to get totally defined on that, because I think you need to have a conversation about this, even this issue of recurring or non-recurring, and get the pluses and the pros and the cons of each on the table. And so that's what will be next week's meeting, will be a focus on those kinds of things, and that will inform the kind of recommendations we'll make for the third meeting. Does that make sense? I mean, that's what we'll do. And so it will include recommendations in terms of managing the budget for the following year, any additional efficiencies that we can reasonably identify, if there are some reductions that don't affect programs that we've already committed to, and then if referendum is a part of this, and I think it's quite likely that that's going to be the case, I want to frame up a discussion for you next week, and then in the third meeting we'll come back with a recommendation for you to consider based on what we hear from you next week. And I guess what's important to know is, does that make sense in terms of how we're laying out the information?
We were just looking at the calendar with September 1st, date that Steve had mentioned, really being or sometime at the beginning of September. We really need to have a decision on August 25th, because otherwise we won't have a meeting with the Labor Day holiday
until that makes sense.
Until after.
That makes sense.
What you're thinking?
Does that include the language as well? Does the language have to be in by September 1st, or
here's
the language has to be in by September 1st? So.
That's what we believe, and we're having preliminary discussions just in the background with bond counsel who would help frame that up. But we're not trying to get too far ahead because you need to have those discussions. But it's important that you know that we've made those contacts so we know, you know, that work can be provided to us. You do have to act on a resolution that requires a specific language. So our goal will be for that 25th, and if there's a problem with that you see or that we see as staff, that'll come in during the process, but that's our goal, the 25th, to present that to you, if that's part of the plan.
Go ahead.
The board packets go out on Thursday, the 21st. Would that language be in the packet on that?
That would be our goal.
Okay.
But again, we have to make some contacts and work through what all the issues are, but that would be our goal.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
The more we discuss it, it seems like we should consider next week having all of the information and your recommendations presented on the 18th and then being able to digest it and then vote on the 25th. So knowing that that's a possibility is a good thing.
Yep.
Mr. Hughes?
Does this require a supermajority or just a simple?
A majority.
All right, I assume. Work towards consensus and all, I was just curious.
Right. That concludes the information we want to provide. I would just simply invite, if there are questions that you have between now and next week's presentation to you, that you simply call me. And that's a general invitation to the public as well. If there are questions that people have, I certainly want to make ourselves available. So I thank you for this beginning discussion, and we'll go to the next step in terms of discussing the options next week with you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
We have a motion to adjourn. All those in favor?
Aye.
And we are adjourned. Thank you again very much.